For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:06 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday morning from 6 until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. I'm joined by the big guy, Sasquatch, the Yeti, 6 foot six, 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on a Home and Garden television and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary, and this phone number will work everywhere in the universe.
Yes.
And we've got a special line open waiting for that call from the space station.
Absolutely.
So we're really looking forward to that. Here is that number, 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yes.
What were the adventures in landscaping this week?
Well, you know, the humidity's drastically up.
It's hot and rough out there.
Hot and rough.
I'm so grateful I'm not a shovel jockey.
It's been hot. Okay. And now we've had, we're getting our regular rain cycle, you know, so it's cooling down.
Yes.
That does. It's amazing. It goes from about 100 degrees to about 79 in about an hour.
And then the humidity goes to 100.
Right. It actually was kind of cool last night, but anyway. Anyway, you know, the grass, you noticed that you didn't have much fungus when it was not nice and hot and dry. But now I've been looking at a lot of lawns, and we got a lot of fungal leaf spot going on.
There's a fungus among us.
As soon as you add heat, humidity, you know, actually the grass likes it on the dry side, you know, so it doesn't like too much humidity that, the fungus really loves that humidity. So you get out there and put some, go to Home Depot, Lowe's. And, they've been carrying a lot, much, much better products at Home Depot and Lowe's, which I've wandered through the aisles and I was looking at the fungicides that were there. They're carrying a higher level of, and a higher quality product there. So, put one application down and you should be good for about another 60 days.
Good, good.
Yeah. A little bit of, mill organite is the next thing to strengthen your grass. And, if you could take it, a little bit of fish emulsion. You know, you can buy, fish fertilizer in granular too, so if you need to put it out and you don't want to use the liquid, you know, then
what's the advantage of using the dry?
It's not as smelly, easier to put out, you know, granular, you know,
it's easier to spread than spray.
Easier to spread, you know, you kind of get it all over.
Doesn't make your feet stink?
Yeah, not as bad, but they say it's deodorized. Can you imagine that? I don't believe that.
Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. So deadheading, you know, on these hydrangeas, people love these hydrangeas that are remote and or reblooming. And a lot of times, and you know, we're getting to the high summer and plants are flowered and they're going through the process of producing seed. If you deadhead, you'll get another flush and a little bit of fertilizer. So how much should you put on a perennial? Maybe about a teaspoon. That's all they need right about now. So, or you can go over them with a hose in sprayer. You know, get one of those Miracle-Gro Sometimes, a lot of times I discourage using hose end sprayers, but on like Miracle-Gro.
Why? Hard to control?
Yeah, hard to control. It's not easily measured. You know, on fungicides, insecticides, I don't do it. It's just, it's too risky when the temperature's like this. And then, you know, you put that in there, and just go just over it lightly, and you can't really burn up the plants, and you'll get a good response on some extra flowers. If your lantana is kind of puttered out, or any of your other flowering plants, your salvias have kind of, you know, spent and they're not looking good, deadhead, go over them with a rehosin sprayer or put a little bit of...
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
As you were talking about the difficulty in controlling the application with a hose and sprayer.
Right, right.
Have you ever seen any irrigation systems that have...
Yes. The problem is with them, of course, like, you know, just by using water, you just always that, you know, calcifiltration on and the crystallization of the fertilizer again at those, when it passes through.
They have to be cleaning the heads out.
Drying. Right, right. It's a process. And they have improved it, you know, where you can hook up and do your lawn just like that.
You see it much in commercial?
No. It's okay. Just, they're out there. Those systems are out there, but there's always that added maintenance step. So the question is whether or not really you're saving time and money, you know, when you have to take apart, disassemble, clean, and you have a problem with it. But so deadheading is a good idea. And a little bit of fertilizer, you know, you can use Miracle-Gro, you can use plant for any kind of liquid fertilizer. They're all about the same, you know, load of your hose and sprayer. But hydrangeas, you know, they've become really popular, the remote in kind. You know, they only had where they bloomed once, but now they bloom all summer long. But the key to getting them to grow well is to make sure they have good soil, number one. Composting, they like a nice organic soil. And then they deadhead. And then you want to use a fertilizer that has high nitrogen. A lot of times people are confused about it because they see the
high.
Lawn fertilizer, basically.
Okay.
Lawn fertilizer without the herbicide. You know what I mean? You can use that as high nitrogen because you'll get that nice foliage. And the hydrangea flower, the blue or the white or the pink that you see, is actually a leaf, okay? And the little flower inside is only maybe about a quarter of an inch. So you want to, you know, if you make the leaves look good, you want to add nitrogen.
Yeah.
So you want to put a little bit of nitrogen on them. And deadhead, and they should flush right back out again. Remember, you know, when I'm people always ask me about, you know, the endless summer, Bloomstruck, all the different varieties, you know, that come out, Penny Mac, that bloom and rebloom, they demand more fertilizer, okay? And they're actually somewhat more, a weaker grower. They're not as vigorous as the, other cultivars that bloom once. You know, I compare when I go to a nursery to select hydrangeas, you know, looking at them, I look at all kinds, thousands of kinds of hydrangeas, probably not a thousand, probably around at least 300 types of hydrangeas, that when I'm looking at them, you know, some are more vigorous and some are less vigorous. Normally, I would say probably most of all the remote in type seem to be less vigorous. And one of the things that really add to it is that they're not, they need more energy because they're going to be flowering more frequently. So adding that fertilizer on them, deadheading them, and making sure they get proper water. Then another question came up, how do I turn my hydrangeas from pink to blue? And that's aluminum sulfate. And aluminum sulfate is a
deodorant.
Yeah, yes, it's a deodorant. It's, so.
Isn't that what's in deodorant?
Yeah, you might be right. You're right. So, aluminum sulfate you don't need to put a lot on there, and you can almost watch it turn blue, you know, because it's very quick acting. So follow directions. Maybe I would say maybe 4 or 5 tablespoons in there, water in. Check back a couple days, see the color change, and then if it hadn't gone completely, maybe another couple, you know, 3 or 4 tablespoons of aluminum sulfate. I will caution you on aluminum sulfate. It does taste sweet. I got some on my face, and I, when I was putting it out there, throwing it out, that it does taste sweet, so you got to make sure you you put it in a high spot so you keep it away from children because you don't want them to ingest any of that.
It doesn't sound good.
No, no. You always got to be careful with the pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers. You know, so if you have children, I always kept make sure it's well above the normal area and locked up. And then also, on you using your if you use lawn fertilizer, if you choose to use lawn fertilizer on your hydrangeas, make sure you do not pick the one with weed killer. Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah.
Not paying attention, you know, and then go out there and get the grab a bag. Oh, no, there's some leftover fertilizer. Let me grab it and put it on there. And well, that hydrangea's not looking too good. You know, you come back and it's looking worse every day. I'm gonna put some water on it.
Yeah,
and it's done. One of the great hydrangeas that you can grow that blooms a little later that because I'm a fan of hydrangeas called Limelight, and this is hydrangea paniculata. And it has a white, starts out with lime, you know, lime colored flower. And these are those flowers that you're going to see for sale as a dried flower in, florist shops. They are, can grow in the full sun. These make great plants in the full sun. The paniculata is completely sun tolerant. It can grow 12, 14 hours in the sun.
Paniculata is the varietal?
It is a species. And then versus Macrophylla and Serrata and all the other ones that want some shade. This one will grow in the full sun. And also, it's a rebloomer and they're pretty vigorous. Again, you know, following the general cultivation is, you know, again, a lot of lawn fertilizer. A next variety of hydrangea, which I really like, is oak leaf hydrangea. It's a native plant in the panhandle, and they're going to get big. But, you know, they have some new dwarf varieties getting 4 to 5 feet, but produce that classic hydrangea flower. You know, they're definitely going to need shade. I mean, some people grow them in the sun, but they suffer a little bit in that late afternoon sun. But if you can put them in the morning sun, late afternoon, they'll create a great hedge. And they're very easy to take care of. As far as the toughness of that plant, I would say given it around a 6 or 7. You know, it's a maybe even 9, I would say, in some spots. If you put a plant in the right spot, occasionally they'll get some fungal leaf spot. But they're a great, easy, if you want to color. But the one detracting thing that people don't like about them is they do lose their leaves during the winter. You know, the classic hydrangea, if you live up north in New Jersey, you will have a climbing hydrangea. And, you know, the walls are covered with that hydrangea. And
Get climbers here?
No, well, they don't do well here because of the temperature, and they don't get... But there's decumberance, which is a variety of it. It's called Barber Ann. It doesn't have the same shape leaf, but it's a climbing hydrangea. It's in the climbing hydrangea family called Barber Ann. It is our native. It is a native. So in Barber Ann is a cultivar. So if you want your wall to be covered with that nice, beautiful hydrangea bloom or hydrangea light bloom, that the Barber Ann is the variety for you. Also, there's a Mexican variety called hydrangea. You have to go online to get these, hydrangea simania. It's a very cold tolerant and produces that hydrangea bloom. But these are some of the cultivars that do well in our climate and some of the things you got to do to make sure they succeed. You know, and then the winter, you know, they're a lot of times they will get a little bit of fungal leaf spot. I usually don't get all bent out of shape about it if I get a little fungal leaf spot. It's just one of those things, you know. It won't really damage a plant too much, and it's going to handle that.
Well, I may ponder hydrangeas.
Yeah.
It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right on the phones to your calls. Love to hear from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:24 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections along with Larry O'Neill.
Yep.
from Larry's Garden, enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. And a special shout out. You know, we've got folks listening right here at 104.5 on the FM. That's we've been doing that forever.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And over these last few months, we're also streaming live on Facebook at Home Pro Inspections. We're streaming live on YouTube, the Mr. Home Inspection channel. We're streaming live on LinkedIn. So we have now gone intergalactic, and we are waiting patiently for our very first call from the International Space Station. If you know anyone who is in space, a space cowboy, space cadet, or other person.
How about mental space?
That's right. So text them or however you communicate, and please let the folks on the International Space Station know we think about them every Saturday morning, and we're waiting patiently for them to check in. So I am playing the real estate game again a little bit.
No.
Yeah. Put an offer in on a for sale by owner condo.
Yep.
I had my friends at Home Pro Inspections inspect, and in the process, we discovered dry wood termite infestation.
No kidding.
So it's going to be an interesting struggle, I guess, to eradicate them. And because it's in a condominium, you can't tent it, you know?
Right.
Often in single-family house, the protocol would be to put a tent over it and fumigate, which kills every bug in the whole place. In a condominium or a townhome-type building, they're just too large. It's not cost-effective to do that, so they'll end up spot treating. So I am really looking forward to observing that with my own eyes in my very own home.
Right.
And I'll be bringing that to you, in a sense, live, or at least in real time.
Some camera, little camera shots.
Yeah, we'll be doing that.
Pictures of the damage.
Yep. So I'd be interested to hear from anyone who's recently had an infestation of dry wood termites and had it spot treated, and what the efficacy was.
Efficacy.
How well it worked.
Right.
Yeah. But I got a feeling it's something we'll be chasing forever. I've made contact with the pest control company who is treating the area, and I've made contact with the Homeowners Association, and it turns out they've been there twice before.
I treated dry wood termites.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's the downside of a spot treat. Did you get the right spot? Did you get it all? But because we're doing essentially a gut-level renovation, we're ripping out the floors.
So you can inspect everything that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to rip all the drywall off.
Okay.
But any of the places that it's been previously spot treated, I'm going to peel that back. We're pulling the kitchen cabinets. Mm-hmm. Is where we discover them is in the cabinetry. And so that way our spot treat will just be either a larger spot or more spots to dry down.
Can you treat the interior with boronic acid? Will that discourage them?
I think once the spot treat, and I'm not sure what chemical they're using. I'm not sure if it's going to be Termidor or what exactly they're using. Mm-hmm. I'll keep you posted on that. But, yeah, as we're redoing the floors and redoing the cabinetry, we're going to put the boric acid all behind everything.
Right.
The boric acid, what I like about boric acid as a pesticide inside the house is it's about as friendly as a pesticide can be.
Right.
As an example, eyewash is often boric acid, very dilute boric acid.
They're using it in a medical field.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a much friendlier thing. And boric has only got a few letters in it. Chemicals that have large numbers of letters. Oxopluoromethoclinone, diacetanol.
Yeah.
I'm like, nah, I don't know what that is.
Organic chemistry.
Right. So, and I try hard to keep the house as chemical free as we're able.
Right.
But in this case, we're going to need to do the spot treat or I'll get eaten by drywoods. One of the things about drywoods is more often than not, they're brought into the home by furniture.
Right.
So you get a nice piece of antique furniture, and it turns out it's got drywoods in it, and that's how they get into the house.
You bag them up or cover them, and then you can put them in the sun or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it's fairly easy to fumigate furniture.
Yeah.
You know, you can get it outside, you wrap it in plastic, pump the chemical in, and off you go.
Even by solarizing them.
Get it nice and hot.
Stick them
in the sauna.
Stick that thing in the sauna. Yeah. Stick the thing, black plastic, cover the thing in black plastic, run it up to about 150 degrees.
Yep.
For a few days.
Yeah, you got to be careful depending on the furniture.
The type of furniture.
Yeah, if you got a laminate or a veneer, especially with our humidity, you run the risk of popping some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. It's much easier to do that. And so we'll see how that all plays out. I'm not enthused personally. I'm very enthused professionally. it's so interesting when you do things all day long professionally. You've been in 35,000 houses. You forget about what it feels like personally to have some of these things disclosed to you, you know. So I'm reading the Home Pro Home Inspection Report. I'm like, oh, my gracious, I got drywood termites. Oh, my gracious, I got this, got that to deal with. We're going to do heating and air. So it'll be fun over the next group of weeks, or actually it'll be about 2 months by the time we're all the way done.
Really?
Yeah, we'll bring you up on the sale process as it goes along.
What kind of flooring are you going to get this time?
What kind of flooring? Well, that's an interesting question.
I knew that would be an interesting question.
Yeah, and I'll tell you after the break. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you. Love to hear from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:36 here at News 104.5 WOKV on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. And joining us, who's got some mold on his plants, is Wes. Wes, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hey, Wally, how are you guys?
Awesome, good, sir. Good. What type plant do you have?
So I got two plants. I've got a gardenia tree. It's a potted. And I've got a weeping fig tree. It's also potted.
Okay.
So on a reoccurring basis, about every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, I get the black mold and the mites on the gardenia.
Okay.
Spray it with a little neem oil or the bear treatment, whichever one I have in the cabinet.
Uh-huh.
And they go away for a few weeks, but they come back.
Okay.
And then on my weeping fig, all of a sudden, the last few weeks, I've noticed the leaves starting to turn yellow and fall off.
On the fig, is it a fig tree or a willow?
No, if I'm 100% sure, it's a weeping fig tree, is what it was. It's got like a spade shaped leaf on it.
Okay, yeah, but does it produce fruit and everything?
No, sir.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, what you probably got aphids on that, on the gardenia. Yep. It could be mealybugs or several different things. But this is pretty easy to solve, you know, with the new stuff that's available. You know, there's all kinds of insecticides that will actually stay in the plant. And mitocoprin is a very good one. And then you can get it on. It's in the ingredient of bear insect control for trees and shrubs. And what you do is you mix it in water and you pour it on the roots of the plant, and it binds with the soil and it's absorbed by the whatever tree or shrub that you have, and it actually makes the plant poisonous for about 1 year. So once you do this, it's going to two different things are going to happen. It's going to dry up the reserve, you know, the eggs, or the it's going to break that life cycle. So the eggs are not going to be produced anymore, so you're going to get completely free of this problem instead of, you know, having to come back every single year. So it's bear insect controls for trees and shrubs, and the active ingredient is mitocoprin, and it's good. You can also use Telstar. It's a quicker acting but doesn't hold in the soil as long. And so, again, it's a systemic. You pour it on the roots. You can spray it onto the plant, but it's recommended you pour it on the roots. But it does take a little bit of time to be absorbed. It won't happen overnight. But that once you get that done, you're pretty much finished with that, you know, repetitive neem oil, you know, wash it off of soap. And that goes for sagos and anything else that you have that repetitive insect infestation. You just can't seem to break loose of it. It's bear insect
and then
trees and shrubs.
Sorry about that. And then the yellowing of the leaves all of a sudden.
The yellowing of the leaves could be caused by the insect. Also, gardenias are a great plant in our climate zone, and they do well. But they're very much affected by soil issues. You know, and if you don't have the trace elements, gardenias need trace elements. They're going to have yellowing leaves. The second thing would be underwatering or overwatering. That could have an effect on them. But if you put a good, I've seen some beautiful, spectacular gardenias in our area. you know, some monsters. I've seen one gardenia on the north side. It must have been 12 foot tall, at least 12 foot wide. It was a huge, huge, huge gardenia. Beautiful plant growing out of the sun. But again, to get the most out of them, you need to have trace elements. You can buy chelated iron. You could buy any of that stuff, making sure you have all the micronutrients there. And also the water's properly applied. Insects can turn the leaves yellow. Okay. So, start with that and you'll get a good response on that.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, then.
Thanks, Wes. Good luck with it.
Yes, sir.
I do love gardenias, and there's nothing like them having them in, August Beauty or Mystery or anything. They have so many different types of gardenias. But again, if you have them, they're, you know, an area that's soggy. They're not going to like the plant sogginess, but they don't want to be dry. So the best place to plant a gardenias is around the eaves of the roof, you know, or a place where the water runs down over that, dumps on them. And then it runs, and it has good grade, you know, runs out, you know, when the water dumps out.
Super soaking, yet not wet feet.
Right. And up against the house is normally going to be more moist, okay, than out in the middle of the yard. Hmm. And then if they can get some afternoon shade, they're going to do good. And then making sure that you fertilize with full elements, give them trace elements, a fertilizer that has, you know, all the good things in it. Trace elements and a balanced fertilizer is really, really good. Chelated iron has all those things in there, and you could get, I think I saw some at Home Depot the other day. You can get it. It's a liquid fertilizer and just spray them on. And if you have a soil imbalance or your plants not looking perfect, you know, some of these, like fish emulsion will work. You could use liquid fertilizer absorbed right into the leaf. You'll get immediate response within a week. There'll be a correction.
Excellent.
About a week, and then maybe another application to finish.
No need to wait for the roots to work.
Yeah, yeah.
Get it right there.
Right there.
Good thought. You asked me earlier, you know, I shared with you, I'm beginning to transition, put in an offer that's been accepted on this condominium. I'm going to give up living in the woods and go live on the water. Kind of fun. About the flooring. What type flooring? Well, we've made some.
We talked about some of this flooring.
Here are the decisions that we've made to this point.
Yeah,
we will have zero carpet, no carpet. I hate wall-to-wall carpet. It was originally intended for poor people that couldn't afford rugs, and it holds dirt.
Right, I never liked wall-to-wall.
I don't like wall-to-wall carpet. So no wall-to-wall carpet, so solid surface.
Right.
The choices we pondered through, I was leaning toward tile all the way through,
right.
Which is what we have in our home now, with the exception of the bedrooms, all tile. And it turned out I was wrong about that. Tanya said, I was wrong. I said, oh, okay. I thought I liked tile, and she reminded me I didn't. And her reasoning was, she said, we've been in that house now 12 years, and she said, don't want to clean grout anymore.
Yeah, grout.
So I said, okay.
Well, you can use black grout.
And then
dark tile.
That doesn't feel
dark
good.
Tile. You dark tile.
Aesthetically, that would not please my eye.
Okay.
So that left us with two choices.
Yes.
Wood or vinyl.
Right.
We just put vinyl. We did a renovation on another condo that's in our rental portfolio. And the vinyl was gorgeous.
Looks good.
It really looks
good. I mean, they've got a long ways with vinyl.
Come a long ways. And at first, she said.
I'm all linoleum.
Well, that's a brand. No, that not a sheet vinyl.
Yeah.
Vinyl that replicates the look of wood.
Oh, okay.
And
no kidding.
At first, I said, that's how impure.
That is very impure.
We went out to Floor and Decor. They had many choices. And I started out with, okay, let's start with high-end wood, solid wood. Because we're on a second floor. We could actually do solid wood.
Right.
So I looked at that, and I said, man, I love this. Look, solid wood just makes me feel right.
I know you're not going to love the price.
installed at the high end. Because we're going to do it once and be done with it. It's almost $10 a foot.
Yeah. Is that oak or pine?
It'll vary a buck or two. But,
right.
So we looked at many different woods. Then I looked at the engineered woods, a little bit less expensive, still the same.
How about bamboo flowing?
Looked at bamboo.
Right.
Looked at that, and then I finally got to the vinyl. And it was kind of funny because when we transitioned into the vinyl aisles, I didn't like it at all. It looked cheap. It looked cheesy. It looked exactly like I expected.
Well, if you're looking at a wood, real wood floor.
However, as we transitioned to the high-end vinyls, I said, this stuff looks good. And there was nothing that was, nothing reached $3 a square foot. So in that 250 plus or minus a quarter, you can get some good looking stuff. And it was interesting as you looked at the different gradations, you know, kind of good, better, best, and really good. it's 100% waterproof at the high end. So you could submerge it and it wouldn't matter.
It won't
you can
penetrate.
Put your plants on it and it doesn't matter. The only thing that you can't do is refinish it if you damaged it.
Right.
But at the same time, it's really hard to damage it.
Right.
You have to do something.
Does it go down in squares or does it go down in rolls?
In planks.
In planks.
Yep.
Planks. Plank vinyl. Okay.
Yeah. It just, much like if you were laying hardwood.
Oh, really?
It looks
comes
the same.
In, is it thick or is it thin?
It's about a quarter of an inch thick.
Oh, okay.
Maybe just slightly more.
And it looks like wood.
It looks like wood.
Faux
if
wood.
If you want it to look like wood.
Okay.
It doesn't look like wood if you don't want it to look like wood.
Right.
It also is available in textures if you want it like a rough sewn.
Right.
Or wavy or whatever. But you can get it in textures. Now, that's pretty cool.
Have you seen a floor done with that stuff before?
Yeah, but not with the same eye I have now that I'm thinking about purchasing.
Oh, okay. Now you've been fit. You're being corrected.
Well, when you're looking at
you didn't know you liked vinyl.
It's kind of funny when, you know, and I've been in, 5,000-6,000 houses as a home inspector. We've been in over 35,000 as a company. When you have your professional eye on, it's different than your personal eye. Mm-hmm. Because your personal eye is all about the aesthetics. Your professional eye is all about performance and is there any damage and those sorts of things. So it's very different. And I guess I'm using both eyes, my personal eye and my professional eye, when I'm making decisions in my own home.
Right.
I'd say we're...
Really, you're using Tanya's eye. She's giving you directions.
Well...
You like that. Yes,
my
ma'am.
Eye and her brain. She's making the
you
decision.
You don't like that. Yes, ma'am.
She asks me my opinion, and then I discover...
Your opinion doesn't matter.
It does. No, she takes my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't mean I always get my way. But if the decision were today, we would go with a high-end vinyl replicating a look of wood. I like a lot of movement in the grain and whatnot. So that's kind of where I'm going.
Okay.
Well, interestingly.
What's the cost difference? $10 a square foot, what's vinyl planking?
Installed under five.
Oh, wow. It's half the price.
Yeah,
less than five.
Depending what you choose, it can be less than half the price.
Oh, yeah. Well, but I know that's right up your line.
Yeah. Well,
you're gonna have to take a shower in your neighbor's next door, you know, so to save your money, you know.
Might do that.
Keep your lighting bill. Your bill. All right, so you're in the upper story, right?
Yeah, second story.
Well, it's always the bottom story. It's always a little cooler, you know, because you have the insulation.
That's true.
Yeah.
When you live on the bottom floor or a lower,
you feel a little noise.
It's the person above you who's funding the cooling of you.
Right.
So we'll be on the top.
And your personal side, right and left side, are you?
Yeah, we'll be on the, we won't have anybody on the right side.
Okay.
So we only have people on one side and below us, no one on the other side or above us.
Okay.
So a little quieter, a little more peaceful.
Yeah.
Plus they're all block. They're concrete.
Concrete.
Even the floors are concrete.
Wow.
Yeah.
The floor is concrete? That's amazing.
Yeah. I'll have to tell you about it.
Yeah. All right.
You'll have to wait.
Yeah.
It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got a very brief break. Jumping right back on calls to hear from you. Love hearing from you. 855-765-1045. I'd really like to hear from someone who's had experience in their own home with vinyl flooring. How you liked it, what you didn't like, and what you do different the next time. Thanks. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 6:54 here at News 104.5. And a reminder... If you wake up one morning with a burning desire to have a large landscaper come on over and take care of your lawn, your garden, hardscape, landscape, driveways, pavers, pergolas, and all that good stuff, something to consider, larrysgarden.com. Right there, you'll have the blog, the videos, frequently asked questions, over 2,000 active bloggers just nerding along the way bloggers do about gardening.
Yes.
Which is a positive thing, you know. I do it about boats. Other people do it about garden. It's okay. Should you need Larry by telephone, he has one. That number is 346-1970. If you're outside of the immediate Jacksonville area, up in Kingsland or down in Palm Coast, 904-346-1970. Me, Wally Conway, easy to find all the time online. GoHomePro.com. Commercial building inspections, house inspections, environmental sampling, everything you need. We can also get your WDO schedule for you. Take care of you. Take wonderful care of you. Operators are standing by. We always have someone manning the phone. So if you wake up at 1 in the morning and you want to schedule your home inspection or your water sampling or whatever you happen to need, all you need to do is call. Here's that phone number, 268-8211. For our friends in Palm Coast and elsewhere in the Hinterlands, 904-268-8211. I am looking for input. I've gotten lots of input here on the Facebook live stream about your individual experiences with vinyl flooring. Tanya and I getting ready to renovate another condominium. It's for us to live in. This makes it a little bit different. And thinking about vinyl floor, thinking about a high-end vinyl to replicate the look of wood. Really like to hear about your experiences, what you've been happy with, unhappy with. In particular is the sound. I don't like that hollow sound that I've heard from some of them, and I want to be sure I've done
vinyl?
Yeah.
Has a hollow sound?
Yeah, the floating floors. They snap together, and they lay there. And early on. The less expensive ones in particular, it sounds like you're
clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety-clickety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not the good clickety-click-click-click of hardwood.
Right.
Donkety-donk-donk of tile. But it's not a good sound. I don't want that sound. you understand.
I never thought of that, but okay.
How
a sound rating for now on the flooring, you know.
Well, particular condo, it's a... concrete block, and it's concrete
floor.
On the flooring also.
That thing's never going to fall down.
No, it never will.
Yeah.
It was actually built in 1969.
Wow.
As officer housing.
Oh, yes.
On your Tigger River.
Yeah.
It was overflow during the Vietnam War with a big buildup at NES Jacks, big buildup at Airport, big buildup out at Cecil Field. They needed more officer housing, and that's how it was originally built.
Mm-hmm.
So from the seawalls, it's the same seawall as they have at NES Jacksonville. I mean, this thing is so overbuilt, it's unbelievable.
It's the same seawall since 1960?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that thing is strong.
Well, look at Mayport. You know, this stuff,
it'll
last forever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly a military-grade installation.
Really, yeah. They didn't spend any money on it.
Yeah. When you're inside of these things,
it must be super quiet.
Yeah, you can't hear a thing. That's right.
Right.
Which is why I want to be sure when I choose the flooring that it's quiet.
So they really didn't have a budget. The taxpayers were paying for it then.
That's right. Hey, we got a minute or two. My buddy Randy's checking in to say hello. Randy, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hi, Wally. How are you?
I am great. You know, I got myself all ready for our Best Buddies Leadership Conference in Indianapolis in 2 weeks. Randy, are you packed yet?
I am coming on Friday.
Friday. Me too. Me too. So Mike Williams is flying with me also. So we'll have you, me, and Mike, and the rest of the folks from Best Buddies. We're going to have a great, great time.
Tell Larry that what is LC?
Larry, the leadership conference once a year, the Best Buddies ambassadors, which Randy is, mm-hmm. Best Buddy pairs, yep. And then the professional staff and advisory staff. I'm the chairman of the local advisory staff. We all get together at Indiana University, which is a gorgeous school.
Yeah.
And we make new friends and we exchange ideas on how to make our chapter stronger. Stronger with volunteers, stronger with members, stronger staff, and stronger economically. Did I describe that pretty well, Randy?
Yes.
All right, man. Hey, we got to go to commercial. I appreciate you. I'm really looking at hanging out with you for the weekend. We're going to have a great time.
Yeah, I'm sorry to bug you, but I just want to call you.
No, I'm always happy to hear from you, buddy. Anytime. You know that. I appreciate you. All righty. It's 7 o'clock here at News 104.5 WOKV. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:08 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday from 6 a.m. until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden and me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. We're taking your calls, which we love to do, at 855-765-1045. And a reminder, happy to have you with us, those of you watching the Facebook live stream at Home Pro Inspections or on YouTube Live and on LinkedIn Live. We have gone intergalactic and head of the line privileges if anyone calls from the International Space Station. Yes. Got Sally on the south side checking in to share her experience with vinyl flooring. Welcome, Sally.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have had experience with vinyl flooring. I had some water damage from hurricane a couple years ago and had to replace the wood floor. So I have a comparison that I've experienced. And I got the luxury vinyl.
Yes.
You were asking about the soundproof. They put a sound guard pad under it, which helps, but I don't like the hardness of it. If I had it to do over, I'd probably go back to wood.
When you say the hardness, meaning the actual hardness of the sound or the hardness as you walk across it?
Just as I walk across it.
So it gives you a little more leg fatigue?
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's got a texture to it, but... and it's a luxury vinyl, and it's pretty indestructible.
So
that's the only negative that I have. But
appearance-wise, you're happy with it. Sound-wise,
yeah.
You're happy with it. However, it's a lot harder on the body because it's a more rigid material?
Yeah, it's less forgiving than wood.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thanks, Sally.
Okay.
Bye, man. All right, over to Ron on the south side, whose grass keeps dying adjacent to his driveway. Ron, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Yes, that's my question.
Is it a concrete driveway?
I have, in both sections, I have the pavers and also even where's the sidewalk, which is concrete.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Paver driveway.
Just a little bit, you know, like a couple inches along the adjacent part.
Is it new driveway or is it the original?
No, it's the original.
How old is it?
Pavers.
Okay. Pavers.
Oh, it's, yeah, a long time.
Yeah.
10 years.
Just trying to think.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, but the problem is there's a concrete band there, okay, underneath the grass. And if the concrete band is, like, super thick, there's going to be less soil there, and it can cause the grass to dry out if you don't have got proper irrigation there. Have you, when it dies, does it die in a linear shape, or does it die in a kind of a rounded out shape, you know, where it looks like a spot versus a line?
It's pretty much like a line, but okay. even all along the solid concrete part, you know, even like the sidewalk, which is not pavers.
Right.
Some of it dies there too.
Does it look like a line, or does it look like a block?
More like a line.
Okay. This is a great question, you know, because oftentimes when you're trying to diagnose, you know, to other people, is this mechanical? Is this caused by the culture? Is this caused by disease? Is this caused by bugs? Well, immediately when you say a line, that's going to mean cultural problem, because things normally don't occur in nature in linear shape. So when a plant gets diseased, it gets a little blotch here, a little blotch there, but when it's uniformly destroyed, you know, or it could be cultural. This is just general indication. It's not 100% accurate all the time, but I would take take a look at the irrigation. You know, make sure that those areas are getting the proper amount of irrigation versus the other thing. Other areas. Then, you know, look at that. And also, you know, because you don't have that much experience on, you know, it looks like it's getting water, but it may not be getting enough water. So check the moisture content of the soil and see how, you know, remove the grass down there and see if it's dry. And then check how deep that concrete band is, or if there's any overflow from the walkway along the paver side. That could be done, simple adjustment by moving the irrigation heads a little closer, putting some supplemental irrigation, or just adding more time to that spot. You know, that would check the soil there. It's 90%, I would say, is going to be dryness and not getting the proper amount of irrigation.
I see. I have a question also about the vinyl floor.
That's
Wally.
Yep, yeah. Go right ahead.
Wake up, Wally.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, you say it's waterproof. If you spilled a gallon of water on that vinyl floor, would water go underneath?
That is a yes. It won't cause the material to expand or contract or delaminate like you are subject to with a lower-end vinyl or an engineered floor or whatever. So, yeah, the drying is still a challenge. But at least the material won't be destroyed while you're working through the drying.
I'm just wondering, would mold grow underneath if you were to spill a lot of water?
If you have a hurricane, you know, and it's under water for long amounts of time, yeah, you run that risk, and you got to get it dried out. Mm-hmm. If you just, you know, you spill a beer on it or whatever, that little bit's not a problem. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to worry about.
Mm-mm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your call. That was a great one.
Here's an interesting thing. So I've shared we're live streaming on Facebook and all that other good stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's a gentleman I went to kindergarten with named Mark Fredericks.
Kindergarten.
He's in New Jersey. Has had an entire career as a flooring expert in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And he's weighed in here on the Facebook stream of the optimal things to do here with this vinyl flooring. So he shared with us there is an underlayment to assure you it's as quiet as possibly can be done.
Right.
It's called whisper step. And you put down that underlayment, it comes in a sheet, and then put the vinyl on top, and it's even quieter than without. So he'll be checking in with us from time to time to ensure we know all there is to know about vinyl flooring.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about the sound issue, you know, that's an issue, you know.
Well, we are going to become experts together.
My level of tolerance is way higher.
Acquisition of vinyl flooring. Yeah. And even that top layer of the vinyl flooring that gives it its durability.
Yeah.
Depending how thick it is. So if you get at least 12 mil thickness, that gives you all that durability.
Right. And 12 mils, that's pretty thick.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. That's what we're doing. We're going for the high end.
You got the barefoot feel, too? You got a rating how it feels barefooted?
You know, I don't know that answer.
Because you don't want to go barefooted.
Well, I do. I go barefoot all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what we're learning.
Well, you know, next time you go to the vinyl showroom, you need to take your shoes off.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Because I know you're into that comfort.
If you'd like to check in and join in the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. The number here into the studio is 855-765-1045. I'll tell you another thing I'm learning along the way, from a personal, blending it with my professional, is the importance, if you're looking at a townhome or condominium, that you make contact with the Homeowners Association or the CAM, the management team who manages it, and you've got to ask about their financials. You need to know that they're solvent. Right. And you need to know what upcoming capital expenses there may be.
Right.
So we did that.
New all that stuff.
Yes. We did that last week or this week, you know what I mean? And discovered that there is an assessment coming in January. They're doing exterior painting, so it will look even prettier, and some other moisture intrusion work. They've not yet set the exact amount. It's between $2,000 and $5,000 they're looking
at. Per each person?
Each and every person. And why
that's a little bit of money.
It's well, yeah,
how
it
many
is.
Units is there?
137.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So it's a $300,000 to a $500,000 project.
Right, right.
They don't have that in the budget.
Right.
And that's why there'll be an assessment. Mm-hmm. So what ended up happening, because I had that information, I went back to, and that was all discovered through the home inspection process.
Right, sure, sure.
I went back to the seller and said, did you know that you're awaiting a $2,000 to $5,000 assessment? The number's not yet been decided. And we settled on a number and reduced the price of the condominium.
Wow.
So
good.
That can't always work, but it worked for
us.
But the important thing is knowing it's coming.
Roofs and all that other stuff. You come in there, you just move in, you pay your down payment.
Roofs were done in this particular instance in 2014.
By the way, you need an extra $5,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's check in with Teresa on the south side, who's pending a re-plumbing. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you. Yes, this is getting kind of scary over here with the amount of dollars you're going to need to spend. But my question is the lawsuit that you see on TV about the re-plumbing and the galvanized piping,
yes.
Do you think it's worth the effort?
Yes, I do. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and Morgan & Morgan, I think, is who I hear is advocating that. But essentially what they've done, to the best of my understanding, is they've created a class action type position to cause homeowners insurance to refund it. So if your house is pre-1970 and you've got the cast iron waistlines and or galvanized pipe, it's worth a phone call. And if you're eligible, that's a good thing. Sure.
Now, does it matter if you have it done while before that they get you on their list or whatever that you want to say?
Yeah, my understanding is you need to work through them to assure that it's done. If you've already solved your problem,
I already replaced mine.
It's not, yeah. You know, you're likely not eligible.
Yeah.
No, I've called people for estimates, so that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, if you think that you may be eligible, I would absolutely give them a call. And they'll let you know quickly, yes, you're eligible, or no, you're not. Doesn't cost you anything to call and find out.
Oh, thank you. That will be a big help.
Yeah, after you talk to them, give us a ring back.
Okay, I will.
Thanks, Teresa. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Bye, ma'am. 720 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Right, jumping right back to your calls at 855-765-1045. And a reminder, if you're calling from the International Space Station, head of the line privileges.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 724 here at News 104.5 WOKV on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill is here. I'm Wally Conway. Heading down to Green Cove Springs, checking in with Donald to see what's up with his flipped property. Welcome, Dave. Donald.
All right, thanks. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, this is a property my son owns up in Indianapolis.
Okay.
We were up there the last couple of days helping him move in, and I was going through the house with him, and there were some major issues that I saw with it. And what I want to get from you is advice on who I should talk to or what we should do next. And I'll explain to you real quickly the issues.
Okay.
First of all, in the basement area, there is half crawl space, half basement. Well, they busted through the walls to put air conditioning ducts and water and drainage in the crawl space side, but they never closed it back up, so it's all open.
Okay.
And there's dirt floors in the basement, and the relative humidity down there was about 80-some% when I put the dehumidifier in there. So that's one issue. And in those winters up there in Indianapolis, I'm just concerned about freezing pipes.
Right.
And the other issue is up in the roof, they blew insulation all over the soffit vents, and there's only one or two vents in the roof. So my question is, how should we proceed with getting somebody in there that can analyze what's going on, what the problems are, what the energy loss is,
right,
and how we do the repairs.
Did you have a home inspection?
Yes, actually, the city came through and inspected everything, and then we had a home inspection, but they didn't address any of those things.
Really?
Nor some structural issues that I saw.
Who was the home inspection company?
You know, I don't know. It was up in Indianapolis, yeah. And my son contractor for it, so I'm not sure.
Okay. I have friends up there that run the largest home inspection company in Indianapolis, so just curious. Good. So the issue with clearing the insulation away from the soffits, that's inexpensive and simple and an easy do-it-yourselfer thing. Assuring that wall, the basement wall, two issues. One, you want to be sure they didn't do damage to it structurally, which is somewhat unlikely. But then getting it sealed back up should not be difficult. The issue with the freezing pipes, that's absolutely an issue. That would be simple and inexpensive to insulate the pipes. Also, as long as the heat's on in the house, that usually keeps it warm enough. So it doesn't sound catastrophic, but it does sound like you should get estimates and proposals to assure that there's nothing going on beyond what you've described, and it can cost effectively solve it.
Is there any certain, I think where I'm at is I want to have somebody come in and do like an analysis, an energy analysis, or look at everything and give us recommendations, because it looks like there's a lot of things that need to be done to get the place resolved.
You absolutely could have an energy audit. I would have your son call Security Home Inspections in Indianapolis. And if they've already done the work, you know, that's just fine. But and ask who they would recommend for an energy audit and give you a specific recommendation. But I would call the folks at Security Home Inspections.
Okay, I'll do that then. Yeah. Get the process rolling with them.
Yeah, Phil Thornberry is the principal there. Wonderful guy. I know him personally. And just call and ask and see if you can get a conversation with Phil. Tell him you're a friend of mine and you need some guidance for your son.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Wally. I appreciate it.
Wish you well.
Okay, bye.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting, interesting. You know, we don't have the freeze-thaw issues that they have up there. So when we do something poorly here in the wintertime, we just get cold. Very, very rare to have any freeze damage. The other thing that impacts them up there with the freeze-thaw cycles is ice damming.
Yeah.
So on the roof?
On the roof, yeah. Right. So when the snow melts and then it freezes as ice, you end up with a backlog down around the eave where the wall is, because it can cool from the top as well as the bottom. And then what happens, the next time you start to get a little bit of a thaw, the water backs up behind that dam of ice and snow, and it flows up under the shingles and into the house. And
whoa,
then it
wonderful.
Freezes again, and you have more problems.
Oh, my gosh.
So the freeze-thaw cycles.
Oh, yeah.
Same with driveways. You know, freeze-thaw cycles is always a rough.
Putting paved driveway up north is a different process than putting one down here.
You're exactly
much more
right.
expensive.
It's 7:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Oh, my, that is the sleepiest intro music we've ever had. We've just got a new system here, and I think it needs some tweaking and tuning. 7:36 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Welcome back. I'll just talk right through that music in hopes that we get better music next time. Holy smoly, Scott. That's awful.
Now, come on. It's not so bad. It's Saturday morning. We're easing into it.
Oh, no.
He's helping him out a bit.
No.
Easy, easy.
Maybe Sunday morning for one of the church shows. It's horrible for the Home and Garden Show. But I don't blame you personally, Scott. Scott's our producer. He does a marvelous job, and it's kind of a strange thing how the music happens to happen sometimes.
You're always whining about the music. They maybe need to make a new song, a little music whiner.
Gracious. That was awful. All righty, over to the west side, checking in with the third musketeer of the Home and Garden Show, Jack, who's got a hole in his drywall. Jack, how did you get a hole in your drywall?
Well, I'd rather not go into that, but I got one in there. It came in from the outside between the partition, between the two-by-fours, or not two-by-fours, but the, whatever you call the joists, I guess, going up and down.
Yeah.
And I got to fix it. It's behind the water cooler, water tank, and I'm going to have to fix it from long range because I can't get back to it without taking the tank off.
How big is the hole?
About 3 inches each way.
Okay, that's not too big. So the easiest thing to do, likely, is get your drywall saw, keyhole saw, cut it on out in a nice nice square, if you like, or circle, if you're able. And then take that piece of drywall that you cut out and use that as the template on the next piece of drywall. Just, and it'll slide right in there. All you'll need to do is put a paint stick or something in there as a backer, and then you're all set.
Well, my problem is, well, it's behind the water tank, and I barely can get an arm through there.
Hmm. You know, since it's behind the water heater, why don't you just, and it has no cosmetic concern, am I correct?
None whatsoever.
Yeah. Why don't you just cut a piece of drywall that seems like it'll fit and glue it and screw it right over the hole and forget about it?
Okay, I can do that. I just, I can do that rather than say anything else. Yeah, I'll do that.
Well, that's kind of the choices. If you can't get to it without removing the tank, you can just cover over the entire area behind the tank. Can you get to each side of the tank?
No, sir, just one side.
Okay. Well, that'll make it a special challenge on the back side. How about, can you stick a board even on the side that's difficult?
Yeah, I think I might do that. I might stick a board with a stick on it and stick it to it. Maybe put some, I was trying to find some putty or something I could slap on the wall and then push the board in there to the wall where it would stay.
Can you get adhesive around the perimeter of the hole?
Yeah, I can squirt some adhesive around there, yes, sir.
Yeah, so you just do that and put your piece of drywall, or you could even use a board, you can use whatever you want. Over top of it, you'll have a nice seal, and then screw it at each end.
What kind of adhesive would you use, Wally, please?
Liquid Nails would be our brand name.
Yeah, that's tough stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay, I never thought about that. I can get liquid nails with the injector on it. Yeah. Just push it in there. That'll work.
Yep.
Hadn't thought about that, but that's the reason I come to you guys. You guys got all the tips.
Well, that's probably not my best tip ever, but given the situation, that it's a no cosmetic concern, and you don't want to spend the time or the money to move the water heater, that seems like a practical solution, though imperfect.
Okay, well, I'll try that, and give Scott a break. He seems to be doing a pretty good job.
Scott's awesome, huh? We love our producer. He's a wonderful guy. He doesn't have control of the music.
Yeah.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Guys, say some more things.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you.
Thank you. I'll have a blessed day now.
Bye, sir.
Hey, Wally, one more thing. Everybody should have said Happy Independence Day instead of the 4th of July. Let's don't forget that's what the day is.
I agree with you completely. Yep. Thanks, Jack.
Sir.
Bye, sir. Yeah. So, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. Jack's problem with his water heater reminded me one of the ways to reduce problems with your water heater is to have soft water.
Right.
What destroys water heaters is rarely the rust. Long before we have rust, we end up with calcification on the elements and whatnot.
Right.
Our friends at Affordable Water Jacks do a marvelous job of analyzing the water so you're ensure it's soft.
Right.
And here's why this is important.
It's not soft if it doesn't, test in, test out,
Diagnostics, always. There's three fundamental things that happen to water, and sometimes companies unscrupulously use these three terms interchangeably, and they're different. One is water treatment.
Right.
Anything that you do to the water to alter it falls under the category of water treatment.
Right.
Water softening, very, very specific.
Right.
That has to do with the removal.
And it's identifying the process.
Yes. Removal of the calcium and the magnesium from the water. That can only be done by an ion exchange. You can only get
There's no other way to do it.
Correct. With the use of salt.
And then you test it. And,
test out.
Right.
Exactly. So if you want soft water, you must, there is no second choice, use salt. If you're worried about potassium or sodium, you can use a potassium-based salt. Easy to do. Third is water conditioning. Water conditioning begins with water softening and then is followed on by another medium type.
Right.
What do we mean by that? Something like a carbon filter to remove chlorine would be a very common thing.
Or osmosis.
There's
several different things.
So water treatment, first and foremost, means anything Right.
Nothing specific. Softening means less than 1 grain per gallon of calcium/magnesium. Our water naturally here in Northeast Florida is extremely hard. That's a term of science, extremely hard, meaning above 14 grains per gallon. Ours is usually at 17.
17. So if the guy says he's putting soft water, and then you test it as it goes in at 17, when you're done, it's still 17. It's not soft water.
Correct. It's treated. But yes. They're not soft. They're
not soft.
Different things.
Right.
And then water conditioning. So why is all that important? It's important because, as I've learned from Mark Kindred of Affordable Water Jacks, if you don't understand the terms of science used in the water softening business, you become the victim of something other than what you thought you were getting. You don't want that. So Affordable Water Jacks, affordablewaterjacks.com. I know them. I like them. I trust them. You can, too. Checking in with Tim down in Putnam County, chatting about humidity. Welcome, Tim.
Top of the morning to you. That gent that called with a house in Indianapolis got my attention when he said that the humidity was like 87% or something. And y'all don't have too many basements here, but...
Nope.
There is a standard on how much humidity, and I think it's well below 87. And I had an experience in buying a house up in Michigan where I learned never buy a house from a little old Italian lady that with her arms a talking says this house has so much potential, because I had two dehumidifiers going in the basement, filling them up every night. Took a drill to the cinder block, and it shot water all the way across the basement.
That's a significant problem.
Yes.
It was. I spent my first Memorial Day in that house digging around the foundation to waterproof it.
Right.
And, again, that was at 87%, I don't believe is...
No. The EPA recommends humidity in a home between 40% and 60%. That's the standard. We get above 60, we start having mold and other problems. We get below 40, and people often have difficulty with the dryness.
Yeah, so anyhow, if he's listening, he might want to pay attention to that. So
appreciate that, Tim.
Love your show. Have a great day.
Thanks. Appreciate you. Yeah, 40 to 60% is the norm.
Is it right?
I set mine in my own home at 45. I've got the variable speed air handler on my... my HVAC system, on my heat pump, that allows us to set the desired humidity as well as the desired temperature. And the discovery is, and I didn't discover it, this is science, that human comfort, as we drive the humidity down, we're more comfortable across a broader range of temperatures.
Right.
So
evaporation.
Yep.
The skin.
The latent heat of evaporation.
Right.
And so by lowering the humidity toward 40 or 45, you're comfortable at a higher temperature, which dramatically reduces the expense of air conditioning because you have drier air that's actually warmer. We set the thermostat at 80 degrees. People say, oh, my God, 80 degrees. Well, it's a dry heat, and it's very comfortable.
Yes.
If it wasn't comfortable, I have a person in my home who would say, Wally, I'm uncomfortable. You got to fix that. Yeah, and I respect that. So I would do that.
Right.
But it's interesting.
Or you're going to get very uncomfortable, too.
And I've done thousands of energy audits over the years.
Yes.
And one of the most common dilemmas that people had would be spouses who argued over the temperature of the thermostat.
That's a typical.
It needs to be colder. It needs to be hotter. It needs to be colder. It needs to be hotter. And what we've discovered is when we dehumidify, that argument went away.
Wow.
I've saved hundreds and hundreds of marriages.
You should have a job as a marriage counselor.
No, I don't want that job.
Okay.
However, if it's an issue that relates to something, a disagreement in the home, a non-cosmetic disagreement, I can't solve cosmetic, but functional disagreements, often we can solve that. I'll give you another common spousal dispute in homes.
Mm-hmm.
Ceiling fans. Is there value in having the ceiling fan on in a room if there's no one in the room? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. It does nothing. Doesn't do anything. It's like the value of having a light on in a room when there's nobody in there. There's nothing to see. Turn the light off.
Right.
If you're not in there to feel the breeze, turn the fan off. It doesn't do you anything.
Mm-hmm. Do you get many spousal disputes about lawn and garden? Zoysia, St. Augustine. Zoysia, St. Augustine.
Yeah, I think they get a few disputes on that. Not many. Not that many. You know, usually the other...
I meant in paver selection.
Yeah, I think that's
more challenging.
You know, right. But not many. Not really. The wife usually just makes a decision.
Works in my house.
Yeah. So it's... there's not many on that type of thing. Colors, you know, something one person may have a preference. There's always one person. It could be the husband. It could be the wife. You know, the expectation is high in that. They're kind of their project, you know. So they're kind of guiding
sure.
the project.
Well,
through.
Often you defer.
Right.
Is this important? No, it's not important to me. You decide.
Yeah, exactly.
When it's real important to both people, sometimes that's when it's a challenge.
Right.
This is really important to me. Well, it's really important to you.
Right.
And we have vastly different opinions.
Yes.
That's when it's challenging.
Yes, absolutely.
I defer on those.
Yeah. So, well, you know, so some of the things that you could do in your driveways, you know, if you're talking about driveway, and we were doing a lot of resealing lately, is that, and this question comes up about brick pavers. Do brick pavers need to be sealed? And they don't, you know. And sometimes you can reseal them. You can seal them, and it will give them a nicer finish, but they don't need it for longevity. Or also there's some sealers that you can put on a clay paver that will consolidate some of the sand. I use masonry sand. I love masonry sand as a filler, but some people like to use Palmeric sand.
And what's the difference?
Palmeric sand is a sand or it's a sand-like product that you sweep in and because you water
it
becomes
source. What is
hard?
Palmeric. What is it? What is its source? Is that a rock that's ground?
No, it's a ground up chemical grainy. It has, I believe, latex in it.
Oh, really?
And yes, okay. And it consolidates.
Oh, like palmeric is like polymer.
Polymer, right?
Got it.
Palmeric sand.
Yeah.
And
now
it doesn't really work that well on clay brace because the problem with clay, it does have a dust in that and it does adhere to the brick, giving it a film look to it. So that's an issue there. But on concrete pavers, they're a cast of gray or beige. They're a muted color. You're not going to really notice it, but it's there. But so, you know, you can use palmeric sand to make sure that the grout joints are not the joints, but the seams are much more nicer. But the main thing is if you're sealing your concrete pavers is one of the most important things right now because they are really, I've looked at so many driveways that are really showing extensive wear in the color and in the...
On concrete pavers.
On concrete and the water wear. You know, the water is washing up against them,
I wouldn't choose them.
Yeah, they have some advantages in color and shape, but they're not a lifetime product.
Got it.
Okay.
7:51 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right back to you for the final segment. Love to hear from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. 7:56 here at News 104.5 WOKV on the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you have been with us. Always happy to hear from you. 855-765-1045. Special shout out to all our friends who've been watching the live stream on Facebook, on YouTube, and on LinkedIn.
Good
from
news.
All around the country. The most incredible, as I said, my buddy Mark Fredericks, I went to kindergarten with. He even checks in every week watching the show live. It's pretty cool.
I got some other good news.
What is it?
People who have been fighting for 6 years to grow vegetables in their front yard officially won. So they can grow vegetables in their front yard.
That's a Florida state?
Yeah.
National.
Florida state, yeah.
Legislature said no more?
Yeah, they can grow whatever they want in their front yard. Vegetables and everything.
Homeowners associations all across Florida are now happy.
I have
a question for you that came via the Facebook live stream from Tia Vincent, a friend of mine who's a property manager. Has irrigation from a shallow well that has stained. You get those iron stains?
Right.
How can you remove that from the house? How can you remove that from the drive? Just tried pressure washing and it hasn't done it.
You know, you can just use a very light dilute solution of muriatic acid. That works really
good. Not the spot treat though. You need to do the whole drive.
Because otherwise it'd be a really clean spot. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There's another red rust is another stuff that's out there.
Which is probably, it probably has muriatic acid.
Yeah,
in it
probably does. So, you know, just
maybe dilute it correctly.
Dilute solution of muriatic acid.
Muriatic acid.
You know, if you have how to avoid this around your foundation plantings is to convert your spray heads to drip irrigation. That will eliminate it completely. So you can do that, and you can also bury a line next to your sidewalk. So that won't give you complete coverage. You can move your spray heads away from the sidewalk, and then you can put a drip line along the sidewalk to get that little small strip, irrigated, underground. So there's ways to do it. You know, it's a little more
prevention is a little easier.
Yeah, there's ways to get. You don't want to have the problem again.
Yeah.
You know, just a drip line in your foundation planting. Move the irrigation heads away. You can have a drip line along the grass strip, which is buried drip line to irrigate the grass.
Right. Excellent. So, Tia, if you're listening, that's great. Glad you got that. And also responded to it on Facebook. That's a good thing. Red rust or muriatic acid to remove those iron and other dark stains from irrigation, typically caused by...
Dilute.
Yeah, destruction.
Yeah.
And I can't overemphasize doing the whole area.
Right.
So you don't have a big spot. All righty. Thank you so much for being with us. We're grateful that you are here. Please use your turn signal. We've got Fox News traffic and weather coming up, and it is 8 o'clock.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.